Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. History is a repeating loop of empires rising and falling. And we just so happen to be born in a time in which we get to experience the fall of at least one major empire. Just as there are many signs of a person's health declining towards the end of their lives, so are there signs of dying empires. I'll read off a few. So some internal signs might be economic decline, such as financial crises, high inflation, and the concentration of wealth, which can lead to instability and resentment. Political instability, including political corruption, weak or unclear leadership, and a loss of trust in institutions. Social decay includes increasing social unrest, declining birth rates, higher divorce rates, and a decline in civic participation. And inequality. A large gap between the rich and poor can lead to internal conflict and social friction. There are things like loss of soft power, right? An empire, it says, can lose influence not through military force, but through the decline of its cultural and ideological appeal. Environmental degradation, damage to the environment, can lead to a decline in resources and stability. Institutional ineffectiveness, bureaucratic and judicial systems may become inefficient, corrupt, or unable to cope with the challenges facing the empire. By the way, much of this is coming from Wikipedia and a YouTube video called How Empires Fall and Why the U.S. is Next. Now, lastly, there are some external signs. Loss of control, so an empire may begin to lose control over their territories, leading to decentralization and the fragmentation of power. External threats, this can include military pressure from foreign enemies, invasions, or mass migrations. And last, but very much not least, is military overextension. An empire that is too large to govern effectively can become overextended, leading to diminishing returns on its military investment. And it is on that last topic, military overextension, that we're going to be honing in on today in regards to the dying U.S. empire. I am recording this on Monday, December 1st. I was going to record this episode last week, but I realized that the situation was evolving too quickly, and I was nervous that by the time I had posted it from the time of recording, it would be outdated, that there would be new information, and that has been the case, so I'm glad that I waited. And who knows, maybe even between today, the day I'm recording, and tomorrow, the day it's released, there may have been even more changes on this front. And I am referring specifically to the action or threats of action between the United States and Venezuela. Just a few short months ago, this conflict did not exist, at least not publicly on paper, and not in the hearts or minds of the people in either of these countries. As far as we know, it wasn't even on the president's mind, because at that time he was still going on about Panama and Greenland and Canada and Denmark and Mexico and Nigeria, and whatever other country he felt like threatening in the moment. Well, as far as escalations and tensions go, this has by far been the most intense and the most likely to actually materialize into something. The last few decades have seen several choices made by the U.S. government to take action in foreign countries that have been poor choices, that have weakened the U.S. on both a military standpoint, a resources standpoint, and most certainly from a PR standpoint, essentially from the way that the rest of the world views the U.S. That's not to say that the U.S. has always been highly respected. Poor choices have plagued the U.S. for decades, if not centuries. But for many people, there was a lingering facade, a belief that the U.S. had established itself as the world's police, that it demanded respect because of its military authority, because of the fact that it was a supposed moral beacon, so on and so forth. While many saw through that facade, and have always seen through that facade, for others who still had that facade in place, the cracks are beginning to show and may have already shattered. The list that I just read off of all of the different ways in which a dying empire reveals itself is suddenly so obvious in the US. Almost every single one of those things we can check off as complete and worsening, or as nearly complete. Well, on the front, you know, of this supposed or proposed action in Venezuela, I'm going to read from a few different articles. We'll start with one in CNN that came out just today, today being as I'm reading this, titled Trump's Threats Bring War with Venezuela Closer as Contradictions and Legal Fears Mount. Now, this all started, you know, a couple of months back as Donald Trump and Pete Hegseth declared basically a new or renewed war on drugs. They declared certain gangs as terrorist groups, meaning that they could then do lethal strikes, which they have begun doing, on drug trafficking vessels in the Caribbean. They began to ramp up the pressure on Venezuela under the guise of this being completely about this being them wanting to stop the flow of drugs. And so the article says, intensifying U.S. threats against Venezuela are raising expectations of imminent military action. As President Donald Trump heaps pressure on the Caracas regime and flexes power in the Western Hemisphere, every public sign and warning by the president raises the risk that the U.S. is on an inexorable path toward a military confrontation that would represent a big political gamble given the public's antipathy toward new foreign wars. Controversy is also mounting because of new concerns about the legality of any potential action against Venezuela and warnings that the administration's lethal strikes against alleged drug trafficking vessels in the Caribbean have infringed the laws of war. Congressional committees are pledging vigorous, bipartisan oversight of the attacks, a rare occurrence in Trump's second term. The rare occurrence there being the bipartisan bit. And in an extraordinary move over the Thanksgiving holiday, Trump appeared to undercut the rationale that he's fighting regional cartels with the offer of a pardon to a former Honduran president jailed last year in the U.S. for funneling cocaine into the country. Trump fueled expectations of looming warfare in Venezuela by warning on Thanksgiving Day that the U.S. will very soon start taking action to stop alleged drug trafficking networks on land. On Saturday, he declared the impoverished oil-rich country's airspace should be considered closed. An armada of U.S. ships is stationed in the Caribbean Sea off Venezuela, led by the world's mightiest aircraft carrier, USS Gerald R. Ford. Administration officials have meanwhile spent weeks crafting legal arguments for action against regional drug traffickers that critics warn fall short of legal and constitutional stipulations. Yet, with the U.S. potentially on the edge of a new war, the administration is yet to provide the public with evidence-based and legally detailed rationales for sending American sons and daughters into action. So it all raises the question of what is the actual rationale here? What is the actual motive? Does Trump and Hegseth, do they really care about stopping drugs coming into the country? If they truly did care about that, would Venezuela be the place to start? I don't have the numbers here in front of me, but from my understanding, Venezuela is actually a very small portion of drugs coming into the U.S., especially the types of drugs that Trump and Hegseth refer to in their fight. And could drugs possibly be the actual motive when, like this article is saying, Donald Trump offered a pardon to the Honduran president who was jailed just 1 year ago for doing this very thing, right? Bringing drugs into the U.S. And in this case, it was something like, I can't remember, 200, 400 tons of drugs, something along those lines. His actions are not in line with his stated goal. So if not drugs, then what? Well, there are several ideas, and we'll go through a few of those. The CNN article thinks it could be this. It says, this raises the possibility that the buildup and threats are part of a psychological pressure campaign to force President Nicolas Maduro to step down or to encourage officials or generals to topple him. Or a possible military showdown with Venezuela could simply be a new sign this administration sees few political, moral, legal, or constitutional curbs on acting exactly how Trump wants. And even if this is all a bluff to trigger regime change peacefully, officials must soon consider what to do if it fails. Trump's authority will suffer a huge blow if he draws down U.S. forces with Maduro still in office. So CNN is essentially saying, maybe this is just a plan to get Maduro out of office. Why might Trump want to do that? Well, they may claim that that's to bring peace to Venezuela, which has had a ton of internal conflict because of Maduro and his repressive regime. I don't think many would claim that Maduro is a good person, a good leader, or that many or maybe even most Venezuelans, you know, wouldn't be excited for him to leave office. But somehow I highly doubt that Trump has altruistic motives behind his actions here for the people of Venezuela. The most logical response likely comes in the fact that Venezuela is one of the largest oil reserves in the world. Most of the U.S.'s actions on an international scale have been around natural resources, primarily oil. So that seems to be a very likely answer here. On top of that, we know that there are many Eastern countries, Russia, China, who have their hands in Venezuela, and that this could be considered sort of a main access point for them into the West under a Maduro regime. So if the U.S. can install a more Western-aligned leader, they may be able to regain some authority and power over Russia and China in the Western Hemisphere. Those two items to me seem to be the most obvious answers. There is, however, the possibility that Trump is just flexing, right? That he's just trying, you know, as he has threatened war now against, what, 7, 8, 9, 10 different countries, that he's testing the waters. He's picking one to see if he can get away with waging war in an effort to distract away from problems at home, be it the economy, the Epstein files, inequality, his other legal battles, him losing support over his main policy points like tariffs, immigration, etc., etc. Is it the gasping breath of a dying empire simply trying to stay relevant, making a last-ditch effort to expand and grow and exert its power as it begins to fall apart? I love playing Risk, the board game. I've been playing it on mobile recently because on mobile, instead of it taking 6 hours to play through a game, and you can play through a match in as short as half an hour, right? Some of the games tend to drag on. If people become entrenched in their territories and slowly build power over time to try and eventually gain a marginal enough advantage to be able to attack. And one thing I've noticed inevitably in those matches is that if they do extend to 2 hours or 3 hours, somebody eventually panics or makes a stupid move. Maybe they get bored. Maybe an obligation came up. They didn't expect the game to take 3 hours, so they kind of lash out. Maybe against someone who spurned them a little bit earlier in the match, who refuses to make a truce, or something along those lines. And it can very quickly turn what was a pretty stable situation with relatively cleanly defined boundaries into a very quickly destabilized and escalated match in which power shifts. And very often it is that person who makes that irrational move that suffers for it. They overextend. Their weaknesses are quickly shown. They're unable to maintain a solid amount of resources in the places where it matters, and the other players can quickly pick them apart to gain an advantage themselves. It feels to me like the Trump administration is itself a sort of microcosm of the overall U.S. empire. The Trump administration is flailing a bit as they are attempting to exert their own power over all of American politics, right? Trying to take over and consolidate power into the executive branch, upending democracy, ignoring the Constitution, checks and balances. And in some ways, their power is showing and they are succeeding. And in other ways, they're flailing a bit. And in the areas in which they're flailing, the Trump administration is making an effort to lash out, to escalate in other areas, to cover up the failings, to push their power beyond what they may be able to succeed in. And all of that is sort of happening at the climax of the American empire, the point at which we're seemingly going to fizzle. Whether or not the Trump administration had existed, this was already in motion. The current administration is both a feature and a symptom of the collapsing American empire, and Trump trying to save his own administration may be the final nail in the coffin of the American empire. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, going to war against Venezuela is going to be the one thing that brings us down. No, it's just another sign in this ever-accelerating death rattle, if you will. All right, moving on in the article, it says, a political risk. A new U.S. war or concentrated military action abroad would contradict one of the president's core foreign policy principles, the avoidance of new overseas conflicts. And multiple polls show Americans are opposed to a strike on Venezuela. A CBS News survey last month found 76% didn't believe that Trump had explained his position. and only 13% saw the country as a major threat to U.S. security. So as much as Trump and Hegseth have blabbed on about how much of a threat Venezuela is, only 13% see it as a threat. And mind you, that's less than half, or about half, of Trump's most avid MAGA base. So he only has the support of even maybe half of his own strongest supporters. The article says that in the past, some U.S. administrations have made strenuous efforts ahead of military engagement to prepare the public for action and to rally support behind the president, as was the case before the invasion of Iraq in 2003. But apart from vague comments about fighting drug cartels, some of which may overstate Venezuela's place in the narcotics trade, senior officials have offered few explanations to the public. Still, millions of Venezuelans would not miss Maduro if he's toppled after years of repression that has impoverished a country with huge economic potential and led to the flight of millions of refugees, including to the U.S. There are some scenarios in which Maduro's departure might benefit U.S. foreign policy and the region, although administration officials have offered little clarity on whether they've planned for the day after any military action. The failure to do so in Iraq and Afghanistan led to foreign policy disasters. Some analysts fear regime change could trigger chaos and bloodshed in a nation as fractured as Venezuela, possibly sending even more refugees into neighboring countries and the U.S. Now, the plot thickens a bit. I'm not going to go into a ton of detail on this, but we'll touch on it. There is currently heightened tension and questions around the legal ability of the U.S. to do what they've done so far with bombing these boats in the Caribbean. I've talked about this several times, especially in my Friday episodes. But there was one incident in particular that is causing quite a stir. So it says, controversy over the administration's intentions in the region has been fueled further by what people familiar with the incident described to CNN's Natasha Bertrand as a follow-up U.S. military attack on a suspected drug vessel on September 2nd, after an initial attack did not kill everyone aboard. Experts and some lawmakers have expressed concern that the so-called double-tap strike would violate the laws of armed conflict, which prohibit the execution of an enemy combatant who is taken out of the fight due to injury or surrender. In other words, it's a war crime. One of the boats was struck, two occupants of the boat remained alive and afloat in the water, and the U.S. military, Pete Hegseth, essentially, ordered a second strike to kill those who were not killed the first time around and who were overboard. The article says details of the strikes were first reported by The Intercept and The Washington Post. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth insists all strikes on alleged drug boats are lawful under U.S. and international law, partly because traffickers have been designated terrorists by the U.S. government. But Trump's critics argue the president is waging war without acquiring the authorization of Congress as is required by the Constitution and is infringing the victim's right to due process. Democratic Senator Mark Kelly, a retired Navy captain and fighter jet pilot, said on State of the Union on CNN that from what he knew about the attack, he would not have carried out the order to conduct a second strike. Quote, if what has been reported is accurate, I have got serious concerns about anybody in that chain of command stepping over a line that they should never step over. We are not Russia, we're not Iraq. They have tied themselves in knots trying to explain to us on the Armed Services Committee how this is legal, not sharing all the information either, which is really troubling, but going after survivors in the water, that is clearly not lawful. Now, Mark Kelly, you may recognize that name, he has been warned by the Pentagon that he could be called back into uniform for court-martial over a video he filmed with other Democratic lawmakers reminding military personnel they were not obligated to carry out illegal orders. The lawmakers have said Trump jeopardized their safety after he accused them of seditious behavior, punishable by death. He has since denied he was threatening death against the group. So going into that just a little bit deeper, there's a BBC.com article called U.S. Lawmakers Demand Answers Over Hegseth Venezuela Boat Strike Claims. And this is very interesting because it mentions here that these are Republican-led committees overseeing the Pentagon. They have vowed to conduct vigorous oversight into these boat strikes. On Friday, the Washington Post reported that a U.S. strike on a boat on 2nd September left two survivors, but that a second attack was carried out to comply with Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's orders to kill everybody on board, raising fresh legality questions. Hegseth decried the report as fake news. On Sunday, the U.S. President Donald Trump said he believed his defense secretary 100%. Meanwhile, Trump also says that Hegseth told him he didn't order the killing of the boat crew. Essentially, they're already starting to throw the military under the bus. And that's a dangerous precedent for the President of the United States to set, especially one who may require military allegiance to retain power. In the end, if Donald Trump spurns Congress or the Supreme Court by ignoring orders or other judges, if he is completely disobeying the law and refusing to obey the commands of judges and their orders, the military is really all he has left for protection. And if he starts doing things like this, throwing the military and service members under the bus, he risks losing their support, and losing their support could spell eventually the end of the Trump administration. All right, now I had mentioned that I didn't want to go too deep into that, and so we'll stop there and simply say that in the coming days and weeks, maybe months, we will hopefully find out a little more about the Trump administration's true motives in the region. Are they simply trying to apply pressure and get Maduro out of office? What happens if that fails? Like the CNN article mentioned, it would sure look terrible for President Trump to apply all this pressure, to make all of these threats, to move all of the military assets into the region, and for Maduro to call his bluff, to not back down, and for Trump to know that a long war is not in anyone's best interest. To back out would then make him look weak. And so what does he do? Does he attack? If Maduro calls his bluff, does he start another decades-long war? And what happens from there as far as the economy, as far as his support, as far as the international response, is anyone's guess. One thing for sure is that the U.S. is gasping for breath. The power dynamic is shifting in the world. It's been obvious for a long time that China overall is on the up and up. They have their own issues, right? They have their own economic concerns. But it seems that as the American empire slowly dies out, China is biding its time. It's making strategic decisions and is poised to take advantage of an American failing. Now, in the long term, obviously, when we're talking about collapse overall, maybe these geopolitics won't matter much. In a world that is warming, in a world with disrupted food chains, in a world of famines and droughts and floods, every country may lash out at the end, trying to exert itself to regain control and to regain power, and all for naught. Collapse may bring an end to globalization, in which case global superpowers may not be as important. Or the opposite may be true, and it may offer the perfect opportunity for a nation or a small group of nations to take control of what, you know, what little bit of geopolitical capital remains. And in the end, who knows, right? It's only a guess is all we can do. But as they say, we live in interesting times in which we will likely get to see much of this unfold in the coming decades. All right, catch you tomorrow. Thanks for being here. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.